Benjamin Button.
Benjamin who?
Benjamin.
Who's there?
Knock, knock. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for Video Games Hot Dog, episode number 97.
Good old 97.
You know what they say about the 97th episode of a podcast?
What is that?
It's, it should have been won by girls, but we seem to have lost them all. Not the girls. The episodes by the girls.
Oh.
Yeah, there's two video games tacos.
That have been in the can.
That have been recorded.
Yeah.
But not... successfully edited. One of them has been edited twice, but somehow the MP3 flies into a bit hole.
I think it's the sneaker net that you guys have got going on. There's like holes in the sneaker net or
something?
Well,
the raw recordings of these files, there's just too many gigabytes.
Are there?
There's too many gigabytes for a regular net to work. So you got to put it on a, thumb stick.
Huh. I'm kind of suspicious of how you said thumbstick.
Yeah, me too.
Zip discs, way of the future.
Oh yeah,
man, those are... I was so goddamn excited zip about zip discs and zip drives.
You could move 100 megabytes.
I know.
Of stuff.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
you could put the entire shareware version of Doom in your pocket. I mean, you could do that. If it
I had
like
a Zip 250. I upgraded.
Whoa!
I know, right?
We used all zip discs for pretty much everything in art school. And it was great until, you know, every now and then the zip disk got corrupted and all your shit was lost.
Oh, I never had that problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it happened all
the time.
Well,
I guess you used them really heavily. I would just like, I was just super excited about them. I didn't really use them for that much. I would copy stuff to them and then never read from it again. Right?
Oh, like, see, okay. That's probably completely safe.
Yeah.
I feel like zip disks spanned that period of time where disks started just being made out of garbage, like straight out of the factory. They just didn't work. I have floppies from the 80s that are fine.
Are you sure?
Yes. Well, okay. So I have floppies from the 80s that were fine 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay, because I had a bunch of floppies that I stored in a... box of floppies, like, you know, that was
a box of magnets.
Box of floppies and garbage chips.
No, just a box of floppies, and almost none of them had readable data on it when I went back to
read
them.
Were they floppies from the 90s?
They were.
Late
from
90s.
The 80s?
The late
the
90s is when
90s?
They started making floppies out of garbage.
Okay.
And they started failing most of the time before they ever succeeded once.
Huh. The other day, 2 days ago, 3 days ago, I read from a CD-ROM, no, CD-R that I wrote in 99, and so that was fine.
See, they told us at the time, these will only last like 10 years. They'll oxidize.
Yeah.
And so, I thought, 10 years? I'll be long dead by then. That's like 5 times as long as 2 years, and 2 years is always the amount of time that you have left to live.
Really?
Yeah. It's, well, this is this.
It takes 2 weeks to get everything done.
This is this anime that I'm talking about. Oh. No, it's actually 2 weeks is the amount of time past which you cannot reliably assume that you will be alive.
Huh.
That's what I'm saying. Do not go to bed with something undone unless you would be comfortable dying with it undone. Put off until tomorrow anything that you would
do. Do not go to bed for 2 weeks.
Yes. Because that would be way too long. Yeah. Mitch Hedberg with a classic paraprosdokian.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's quite a word.
How's it going, guys?
It's going good.
Yeah, okay.
We did an arcade and pinball
convention. Yeah, did a whole thing.
There were like a bunch of people who came to that thing.
Yeah.
Several,
like 700 attendees?
I think it's between 700 and 800 people.
That's a bunch of attendees.
Yeah, for a first-time thing that we didn't advertise at all.
And we
held it in a shoebox.
We promoted it in our way by telling our existing fans.
Oh, sure. I mean, there was definitely some promotion.
Telling our army of winged monkeys to go and, I don't know, fart right in the sky.
Fart right.
Fart right was the worst villain of a Western. Cartwright was a common name in Western.
Shaint Fartwright.
Shaint.
Shaint that the truth.
Oh, that's a great name.
Write it down.
Like, it's like a cross between shart and taint.
Exactly.
Oh, right. And while you're adding names to our NPC list, Jenny over lunch at ZapCon.
Jenny over lunch? That's a great name too.
That's pretty good. There was a menu item that contained a basil raspberry compote, which she decided to interpret as basil raspberry compote, moving the hyphen and making it a British guy with two names.
Basil Capote. Compote.
Compost. Yeah. Compost Capote.
Compost Capote.
The garbagest writer.
Truman Truman.
So yeah. After ZapCon, nothing. There's nothing. Like, we basically, as soon as we finished recording last week's episode of Video Games Hot Dog, we started schlepping fucking pinball machines and arcade games
cabinets
from all over town to a hotel. Kevin then got sick, puked into a boot all weekend while I played video games.
That's not entirely true.
And Wes did all the work. I didn't even really play any video games. I played a bunch of pinball machines.
Did you?
I wandered around a lot. I sat in the lobby of the hotel playing video games on my phone.
Okay.
It's like, I wish there was an arcade somewhere around here. This town is so boring. ZapCon was a by all of the metrics
that somebody cares about,
if they don't care about money, ZapCon was a huge success.
It was even a pretty reasonable financial success, I think, for a first time effort.
Yeah, it depends on to what extent you expect to lose money,
right,
in a financial endeavor.
I think you are guaranteed to lose money, especially if you consider your time worth.
If you indiscriminately spend money and do not earn any, you are guaranteed to lose money.
I think if all labor had been volunteer, and assuming that the rental truck does not cost $1 billion upon its return.
Yeah, we're about to learn what happens when you fuck the shit out of a truck.
Or when a tree fucks the shit out of a truck.
I don't know that you can really blame the tree.
I think the tree is really to blame. Actually, this is a question that I was going to pose to you guys is, are there legal limits about how much
drunk a tree can be?
How much trees should be trimmed? And can you sue whoever is in charge of the tree, like maybe the city?
Who is in charge of the tree? I'm pretty sure that Neptune is in charge of the tree. Wait, this is a sea
Neptune?
Tree, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what the... Pan? Who? Dionysus?
No? Was there a specific god of the land?
Yeah, Wood.
Wu-Tang?
Wu-Tang. Wu-Dan. It's like Wodan, but Wood.
So what was it? Neptune is the Roman version of Poseidon.
Okay, sure.
Okay, yeah. And so that's Zeus.
Yeah, and trees are the Roman version of water. They would bathe by rubbing a pine cone.
Oh, okay. That explains hippies, I guess.
Sure. They're just Romans.
They're just
they wear sandals.
Forward shifting.
They wear sandals.
Yep. Togas sometimes.
Yeah, they own slaves.
Sure. They eat dormice.
Hippies have ferrets. As slaves, as opposed to Gauls.
Yeah. The only thing I know about Gaul is that it was divided into three parts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only really important fact.
They were famous for their bladders.
Mm-hmm. The hippies?
And their stones.
Gauls.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay.
They had big, big ones.
Yeah.
They could go a long time without peeing, like a camel. Can camels go a long time without peeing? I guess it follows.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
They store water in their dromedaries. I'm pretty sure that's the right terminology.
Those humps.
Yeah,
those
but then they
lovely.
But do they use it and then pee it out, or do they pee back into their humps?
Maybe they just use it more efficiently, so they never actually have to pee.
Yeah.
Do you think that they could pee into their humps three times before it became toxic?
I thought it was seven.
Seven.
Wow.
I've been really tempting
fate.
Yeah, Jesus.
I mean, sometimes I'm just like in my office and I'm like, do I want to walk all the way to the bathroom and then all the way to the kitchen to get more water? Nope.
Sell two birds with one stone.
There was, I think it might have been a moth story, but there was a guy who got shipwrecked, kind of. He was on like this boat and he was with a group of people and they like... the boat crashed and they were on an island and they were pretty sure that there was a town like 30 miles away, and he volunteered to go try to find the town and got so far like they had no real water or food or anything like that. He got like probably 30 miles out and was like just parched and actually drank his piss, and then 5 minutes later was discovered by a group of scientists. It turns out he was 20 miles from town, and also that the people who were left behind at the boat figured out how to get the radio working and were rescued hours before. It was like the worst combination of circumstances. But yeah, he said it was awful. He said it was like hot and terrible tasting and just gross.
I mean, gross. What did anyone expect?
I don't know. You know.
Lemonade.
So I knew a guy who for $30, the room collectively offered $30, which was all the money they had, because this was just like a bunch of high school kids in punk bands, for this kid to drink a Thirst Buster cup full of his own.
Oh my God.
And he did
it. But in the time it would take to save that much, it would get even worse.
He said that he had been drinking beer nonstop the entire night, so it was basically just water. And he was so drunk that it wouldn't have mattered if it hadn't been.
I guess if you are well hydrated, your urine is probably a lot less foul than if you are really dehydrated.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe that's something to keep in mind. Just start drinking your piss early and often.
Yeah, no.
When you're backpacking.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yeah.
If the longer you wait, the worse it's going to be.
Exactly.
Just pull that Band-Aid off.
Just do it right now.
Yeah. No, start before there's an emergency. Just yeah.
I think you're using Band-Aids the wrong way.
Well.
That little absorbent pad is not what you think it's for.
Did you guys have any exciting ZapCon experiences to share? You were basically... I wandered around
6 hours
coining up some of the manual coin-up video games.
And then just telling people to throw their drinks away, because we didn't want no drinks in no game
rooms.
Did you actually have to enforce that?
Yeah,
like 12 times-ish. I threw away
so
a
like
bunch of
one
bottles.
One person brought in a 12-pack of Pepsi, and you had to tell them 12 individual times, please pour this Pepsi into the back of a pinball machine.
It was, like, I hate when people come up to me and tell me that I've got to get rid of my fucking bottle of water, which is a thing that, like, people are like, it's water. And I'm like, yeah, I know. This is, like, obviously, like, way more restrictive than we have to be, but we're just super paranoid about these privately owned machines that we would have to replace.
It's a little more justifiable, I think. I mean, it's more justifiable for us to do it than for somebody to do it to us. But still, like, the times that I don't like being told that I have to get rid of a bottle of water is when I'm going into, like, a fairgrounds or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like we were selling, like, it's not like we were selling concessions inside and we didn't want you to bring water from outside. It was like, really, we didn't want any food or drink in there at all. There were a couple of people chewing gum that I was like, I wonder if I should tell them to stop chewing that gum.
I think some gum got placed on the bottoms of some of the arcade machines. I think somebody was complaining about that.
That sucks.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm stereotyping. They just both happened to be girls. I saw two girls chewing gum.
Were they popping their gum in a distracting manner and wearing a poodle skirt?
They were not.
Two of them wearing one poodle skirt.
Yeah, wow. It was actually a poodle in a dress. No. It was just teenage aged girls. That's not a thing, right? Just teenage girls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm still kind of sick.
I saw a hobo spitting on a pigeon.
Yeah? Yeah.
Nice.
I gave him a quarter.
Did he hit the pigeon?
He did.
Wow.
He did.
Yeah, that's worth a quarter.
I was walking from one place to another, and I saw a hobo spit on a pigeon, and I thought to myself, I like the cut of that hobo's jib. And so when the hobo asked me if I had a quarter, I said, sure. And I gave him a quarter.
You can go.
I bet he was
going
to go play a video game. No, the video games were all on free to play. That hobo would have had to pay $20 to get in to where the arcade games were, and I bet he didn't have $20. You know, maybe he did.
Yeah.
If just 80 people were as impressed by his pigeon spitting skills as I was.
Pigeon spitting? Do you think that's his hobo name? Pigeon spitting?
Sure.
Okay.
Have you guys been playing any video games? Speaking of video games?
Not really. I got to the last mansion in Luigi's Mansion, and I tooled around on Minecraft a bit. But other than that and pinball, that was pretty much all.
What kind of pinball did you play?
I played nearly all of them that were there. There were a few that I missed
out
on. Yeah.
There were like 100 pinball machines.
Well, it was like once each.
Sure.
So, but and there were a few of them that I missed. I didn't get to play the Twilight Zone one because that was tournament only, I guess. But
Yeah, that was aggravating. Yeah. When I learned that we were going to have a Twilight Zone pinball machine, and I was like, oh, good, I like a Twilight Zone pinball machine. And they were like, no, that's for the tournament. You're not allowed to play it.
Well, you're allowed to play it. It's just $2 a game. Yeah. Right, which, you know.
But yeah, there were some good ones.
I'm also curious how I wound up in a position of not being allowed to play any of the fucking games in that building that I was paying for.
Sure.
Now that I think about it, I'm extra pissed off for that. God damn it.
Yeah.
I think privilege.
I think you probably could have swung some influence if you wanted.
Mm. Yeah, the Twilight Zone. No, not Twilight Zone, because I didn't get to play the Twilight Zone. Iron Man. The Iron Man machine was really good.
See, people were talking disparagingly about the Iron Man. So there is one company continuing to make pinball machines. So there's
Stark
like a
Industries.
Tron Legacy pinball machine, and there's an Avengers
pinball machine. That one
wasn't so
great,
machine.
But
really?
I
enjoyed the... Did you get the Quora multi-ball?
No.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah. Isn't that girl's name?
Oh, maybe. I don't remember anything about that movie.
It wasn't very good.
The movie or the pinball game?
The movie.
Right. Okay.
The pinball machine I thought was pretty good. It had a recognizer.
Oh,
yeah? You hit the thing in front of the recognizer a bunch of times, and then it dropped down and let you shoot the ball onto the disc.
I think I want a t-shirt with a recognizer on it.
Okay. Maybe I just did not do well enough at Tron to where it started getting good.
Well, the guy that owned it said, basically what you do if you want to get a bunch of points is just shoot the middle over and over again. And I did it. And it was right. He was like, careful, though. When the ball comes out of there, it often has some spin on it. And I was just like, what the fuck difference would that make to me? I have no idea what I'm doing. So I just ignored it. Pinball people are real excited about multi-ball. That's the first thing they will tell you. It's not, though. Multi-ball is stressful. Multi-ball is not fun. Multi-ball turns a pinball machine from like a goal-oriented thing where you could potentially understand a rule set to some uncontrollable chaos.
It's fun, uncontrollable chaos.
I do not tend to do very well on multi-ball, but I do. It does increase my score a bunch, which is cool. I'm not a really good pinball player. I like pinball, but it's definitely not not one of my top 10 skills.
When I get home tonight, it will be the first time I have been in my house with my pinball machine that I bought while we were in San Francisco.
You picked a cool one. That one's got some neat features.
I know. It's got a jump roping mini game. It's got a punch bagging mini game. And it's got a whole bunch of racism. We met this guy. One of the guys whose pinball machines we picked up was like, oh, man. I was like, oh, Champion Pub. I like that one. That's the only pinball machine that I own, and you own it, too. And he was like, yeah, and check it out. I did all the voice recordings for a bunch of extra racism to add to it. No, it was weird, man. So he was like, I've done all the voice work for three more boxers, and I'm just waiting for somebody to, find somebody who can do the code to add them into the game. He's like, the first one is an old Jew, and he told me the name of the old Jew in the voice. This guy himself is an old Jew, so that's okay. He's like, the second one is an Indian boxer named Mustafa. He did that thing. He's like, the third one is a black guy. And I was like, all right, we got to go. We got a lot of pinball machines to put on this truck before the end of the night. And so it's already super racist.
How is it racist? Like, it is
racist in the way that all boxing video games are racist. Like,
it's always Mike Tyson.
So there's one of the people. So like, basically, there are 10 boxers that you can start fights with over the course of the pinball game. When they turn around, they're all a fat Irish guy.
Okay.
Right? Because they're not going to actually, like, devise a system of building a bunch of little interactive
faces.
Mannequins for you to shoot a pinball at. But, like, one of them is Franz von Payne. And he's like, oh, I am very much going to enjoy punching you in the face. And then
that's literally something that is said by the machine?
Something similar to that. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry I'm about to hurt you. I'm not actually sorry. And like, he starts to really, like, it becomes clear that as a German guy, he actually enjoys being beaten up by you. And there's
is that racist or just strange?
It's dumb.
Okay.
But it's, I mean, you know, so it is racist boxing in the way that, like, Punch-Out, where you were fighting Vodka Drunkinsky, the Russian boxer, was who... As we know, became Soda Popinski, which is just kind of innocuous and funny.
Right.
But I mean, so I don't know if it's racist or not. Is the, like, so So, like, Pacific Islanders have vulnerable belly buttons with, like, Band-Aids on them. Is that racist?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's just weird. I mean, is it racism if it's just some sort of weird, like, you just decide on some sort of strange trait? Like, it's not like every German...
Like how Russians like to drink vodka?
Well, okay, so that would be something
that I
could
imagine. And
every
German
is
a sexual deviant? I feel like that's a...
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Now is the time when we touch the monkey? Was that a sexual thing?
I feel that broadly, if you were to make a list of German stereotypes, like being into porn with poop in it is one that... Like,
you must spend a lot of time looking at strange... Internet.
I am sites. I am a student of racism.
Okay.
I'm a racism enthusiast. I would not characterize myself as a racist. I'm just a...
So you're not a baseball player. You just like baseball cards.
Sure, yeah. There you go.
You like it when people draw on them and make jokes.
I do buy the racist edition of the Guinness Book of World Records, which is just the best. It's a list of the best racists.
If you were really into, I don't know, the Indy 500 and you started a podcast, you could call it The Racist.
Yes. So that was exciting. This guy was real big into modifying his pinball machines.
I always thought that would be kind of cool to get a pinball machine and then redo the artwork to give it a different theme.
Yeah. To put more dicks on it.
You'd be stuck with whatever the digital display was, unless you were
using a good coder. There is apparently some sort of like standardized way to just hook PC hardware up to that digital display and hook it into all the inputs and write your own software for it.
Oh, wow. That would be cool then.
DMD is what they call the dot matrix display is what they call those.
Something like that.
There was one machine at ZapCon that had a color DMD.
Huh.
But even like the Tron one, even the modern Stern ones from the last couple of years still just have that orange LED screen.
There Although was they... a guy that we were picking up machines from that had made his own video pinball machine.
Yeah, that's a thing. We saw one of those at California Extreme that was like the size of an entire pinball machine, but it was just a big flat screen TV as the surface and then another flat screen TV as the back of it. And it just was running this virtual pinball software that could emulate a bunch of real pinball machines.
So like the iPad.
Yeah, but in the form big, but in the form factor like of a real pinball machine and with an accelerometer so you could tilt it. I don't know if I think that's awesome.
I mean, I don't know if it's more awesome than a regular pinball cabinet, but it's awesome in the way that MAME is awesome.
Yeah,
right?
The one that this guy had made was pretty cool, actually. It was a MAME cabinet that was also a virtual pinball machine, and it was called Morpheus. I don't know if that was its name or...
That was the art. Right?
Yeah, there was art. There was a marquee above it that said Morpheus. And I said, what's Morpheus? And he was like, oh, it's this thing I made. And he was real enthusiastic about showing it to me.
Yeah.
Everybody's so great.
Yeah, I mean, the vast majority, well, not the vast majority, the majority of the machines that were brought to this event were brought by the owners for no real gain of their own other than to just let people play their games, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I took all of mine.
Yeah.
And now it's cool because they got play, like people got to play them, you know, which is what I want to happen with the games, right? I mean, I sort of feel like I am... The reason that I want to own arcade games is so that somebody will take care of them and sort of preserve the experience of playing them in that context. And if nobody but me ever gets to play them, you know, nobody but me and the people that come to my fancy parties or whatever, then that's a little bit of a waste. And I mean, so I felt a little guilty buying stuff from California Extreme that I had no intention of taking back to California Extreme, but using them in a new thing that's like California Extreme, only in Arizona.
Wait, you're buying stuff at California Extreme that you had no intention of taking back.
Yeah, I bought... So me buying that Rampart cabinet that was at California Extreme means that next year that Rampart cabinet is not going to be at California Extreme.
I see.
So
sorry.
It's
I did not understand what you meant.
Yeah. Maybe somebody else will bring
one. You felt guilty about buying stuff?
I... I don't know that I say, I would not say that I felt guilty, but I did like at least recognize that there was this one aspect of what I was doing that was diminishing.
Interesting.
Something that I cared about, right? Like it was.
I guess, yeah, like we don't deal with this much in games anymore because they are largely just digitally distributed and there's just no importance to having a copy of it, right? Like you playing a game doesn't prevent anyone else from playing a game. Pretty much in the modern world. So it is, I don't even think about the
fact that like Sony Home or whatever, where you had to wait in line to play the bowling game.
I don't know.
You had to wait in a virtual line.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. That was just part of the design.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah, but like you having actually purchased the machine is like an actual like physical change.
You know, and I have no idea how likely it was that those games would have been at the next California Extreme. Anyway, I've only been to one of them, so I don't know what, I have no sense of how it changes over time. You know, I'm curious. I mean, we should go to next year's.
When is it?
It's in late July. So you will already be in San Francisco, and so will I probably. So let's do it. Let's do it and buy 50 more arcade games.
Are you going to San Francisco again in July?
Yeah, probably. Because that's when you're going to sort of start being there all the time.
Theoretically, yeah. I mean, yeah. Melissa will start her job July 1st, San Francisco. So
yeah, so there has to be a place to stay.
Yes.
And I could just sleep. I can just sleep curled up at the foot of your bed.
That's true.
In your cardboard box. I can put on some floppy ears.
Yeah.
And mistake me for a different cat. Yeah. Because cats are known for their floppy ears. Oh man, I had been away from my cat for a long time, and I went yesterday to clip my cat's fingernails. Because they get real sharp, and she gets stuck in the bedclothes and stuff. And when you clip her claws, she gets nice for a while. But two of them, the same one on each foot, had gotten like ingrown and all like super thick and gnarly. And she was like, they were obviously real tender, and it was gross. And it sucked. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings or your hand.
Did you manage to clip him?
Yeah, I did. I don't know. I haven't looked at him to see if it like fixed it, but yeah, that's a story that literally nobody fucking cares about.
Well, do you normally clip them more than once a month?
No, I clip them every few months, but it had been an especially long time.
So it wasn't like you clip them.
It wasn't just being gone for a month. It was like the fact that coming back meant she was super friendly and not gonna like fuck my shit in half.
Right.
If I tried to do it. We have an understanding. She hasn't fucked my shit in half in a really long time.
She's become a sweeter cat, I think, in general.
Yeah, she used to be mean. Yeah. Mean old cat. Good cat story, Zach.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Did you play any other video games?
Yes.
Do you remember what they are? Or were?
I played it while I was sitting at Networks, the bar in Phoenix where drinks go to drink. With Aaron from the Mini Bosses. He was like, you should play King Kashing 2. I said, should I play King Kashing 1 first? And he said, no, you shouldn't. So I downloaded King Kashing 2 for the, it might be King Cashing. It's spelled Cashing, but Cashing isn't a word.
Cashing?
Well, C-A-C-H-I-N-G is a word, like secreting or secreting treasure into a chest.
Was it K-A-S?
No, it was C-A-S-H-I-N-G. It's like an RPG where the level map is like a comic book, and each panel is like a fight with you're some sort of zombie king.
Okay.
And you enlist some other zombies, and combat is like a slot machine. And your equipment and your loadout and stuff are determining what appears on the reels of the slot machine.
I wonder if this is made by the same company that did that...
King Kashing 1? Yes,
no,
I think so.
No, that Rampart-esque game. Do you remember that for iOS?
Zen Wars?
Something like that, yeah. Because it was also laid out like a comic book in a lot of ways. The like cutscenes were, at least.
Let's look.
But if you're actually traversing things like a comic book, then maybe not.
But it's like a slot machine.
So the combat was slot machine?
Yeah, the left reel has your dudes on it, and the right reel has enemies on it. And like
verbs
their ability to dodge is sort of in part how many of the spaces on the reel are occupied by a picture of them. And sometimes there'll be one that has like shields in some of the spaces on the right reel. And if you, so basically if a weapon in the center reel lines up with one of them, it does a certain amount of damage. If a dude in the left reel and one of them lines up, it does a certain amount of damage. If a dude, a weapon, and the enemy line up, it does more damage. If a dude, the type of weapon that that dude specializes in and the enemy appears, then it does like five times as much damage as any
other. Do you have any control over it?
Yeah, actually, this is the part that sucks. You can, the reels are fixed. It's not like it builds a reel that is like, you know, a certain number of icons and a certain number of spaces, and it's predictable. So if you watch it long enough, you can see it's like, all right, dump, dump, dump.
Right.
Da-da-dump.
So that's,
and so if you stop it at the right time, you can always get.
That's like leveling in Mario and Luigi's Bowser's Inside Story.
Yeah.
Which I found kind of annoying.
Yeah. Because the fact that you can exert control over it means that you kind of have to, or you feel like a sucker.
Yep.
I just let myself feel like a sucker.
Okay.
Like, there are some fights that are made difficult by the fact that you sort of have to do that in order to win them, but those are, like, kind of optional side
Do
fights.
You get any influence over what goes on the reel?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that would be the way.
Your equipment,
to do
like,
it.
Your choices of equipment and dudes determine what's on the reel.
I see. Okay.
Like, every character and piece of equipment has like a power and a frequency, or like a hit rate, and that's the number of times that they appear on the reel. And I think maybe there's like 20 spaces on the reel, and you have three guys, and the most hit rate I've seen is five.
Huh. Yeah, I wonder if you could get three copies of the same weapon, and with a hit rate of seven or something, and just fill up the whole reel.
It's just there all the time. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really messed. I mean, at that point, it becomes
deterministic.
Yeah, which I wouldn't think that they would want.
Probably not.
But also, I mean, yeah, I don't know, man.
It is interesting that people try to make role-playing style games out of those kinds of mechanics.
Out of other, like, started out with the match 3 one. What is it?
Puzzle Quest.
I
think it started out that way. Like,
I feel like that was the big popular one that sort of created this drive for people to make those kind of things.
I mean, the game that I played while I was sort of delirious in bed was Nimblebit's new, like, snake variant that's an RPG, Nimble Quest. And, like, I felt like it was actually kind of a neat idea, and I really liked it for the first, like, hour or so. But then very quickly kind of realized that it was designed around their microtransaction system, where they're like, it's a free-to-play game, but then, you know, if you want to, like, level up all your characters a bunch, it is impractical to try to do it by playing the game. You basically would have to pay the money to do it. You run around and you... So the snake aspect is you being a little adventurer who has different kinds of attacks, or has a particular kind of attack, and you meet up with other adventurers who then start following around behind you. Okay. So it's like a line of, instead of just being an undifferentiated line, which is the snake, it's a line of like little dudes walking around.
Party.
Yeah, which is, that. I thought that was kind of clever. And each one of them has like different attacks. You get to choose your leader from the list of heroes that you've encountered.
Okay.
But then the guys behind you are just sort of just following and doing their attacks when it makes sense. And then you wander around, you encounter enemies and they have drops, which are currency or little power-ups or whatever. And you just wander around until you kill enough of them and move on to the next level. And, you know, like, that's pretty satisfying. I liked Snake as a game.
Yeah.
And so it was...
That sounds amusing. Is it iOS?
Yeah, it's iOS and it's free. So it's like, I think you will have fun with it for an hour and then I think you will get pretty tired of it.
What's it called?
Nimble Quest.
Okay.
And this is the sound of everyone else buying this game.
Or downloading the game. It's the same people that made Tiny Tower or whatever, and like that, they came out with a plane game recently, I think, too. I like, you know, I think they are a decent company. It was just weird how strongly the design seemed to be fueled by sort of letting you play for a little bit, but then, like, if you wanted to see the end of the game, you kind of needed to give them some money, which,
that's fine, yeah. I guess. It's just...
I mean, I'm fine with a demo.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, it means you buy half the game.
There is like a really rare currency that does drop in-game, but...
like Tower Bucks.
I guess. It's but they,
every once in a while, a famous celebrity will make you take them somewhere on the elevator, and then they will give you a Tower Buck.
I see. Yeah, and so those are things that you can buy readily, but you get them maybe once every two or three times you play, and then those are things which get you like special power-ups or the ability to replay a level or something if you die. Yeah, I would almost want to go back and make sort of an RPG based on Snake that messed with the notion of what Snake is, the same way that I can't remember that name of that game that had like all those different sort of weird Snake variants that we played like maybe 6 months or a year ago.
Oh yeah.
That was pretty cool. Like just a bunch of different ways of thinking about what Snake was.
What was the context in which we
played? I don't know. It was either, it could have been a Flash game.
Games. I think it was a Flash game, but
It was like, you know, there were things where like you were teleport or you'd be gathering the little bits which would make your snake longer, would cause other ones to appear that were like just immovable blocks, and you had to remember which ones are which.
Yeah, snakes on a Cartesian plane.
Snakes on a Cartesian plane, yeah.
Oh, look, I don't have Flash installed on this, so luckily no noise. But, yeah, I don't remember when we talked about that.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
I forgot about another game that I played. A game called Evoland.
Okay.
Which is interesting. I don't know how far I am through it, but I can't see a whole lot of other directions for it to take its shtick. It starts out as, it looks like a Game Boy game, and you only have the ability to move to the right. And so you move to the right, and you hit a treasure chest, and that unlocks the ability to move to the left.
Okay.
And then you can go left to get this other treasure chest, and that unlocks the ability to move in every direction.
Okay.
And then you slowly unlock, like, upgraded music and color palettes, and then the ability to move freely and not just on the grid, and, like, then you get a sword, and you unlock enemies, and then you start fighting enemies, and then, you eventually unlock hit points, so you don't just, like, start over at a save point the first time you get hit. And it just progresses through into, like, a 3D moving around and hitting stuff with a sword game. The overworld map has like turn-based combat, which you would hate.
Okay.
And the individual places that you go into off of the overworld map have Zelda-style combat, which you maybe would like.
Okay.
But yeah.
Huh. Is it following sort of with a rough eye towards the trends of what happened in history?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know how accurate it is in terms of ordering and
sure.
stuff.
I mean, that's tricky to determine for real anyway.
It's also a little... I kind of wish that there were never chests with items in them. Sometimes, like...
It's just...
Sometimes a chest will just have a key in it, and then you have to go use the key in a door. But it's not like you've gotten the concept of a key. Like, I feel like they could have framed things a little differently and, like, sort of stuck to their own shtick more.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's neat. It's cute. It's a cute idea, and it was executed pretty well.
What platform is that?
Steam PC.
Steam PC.
Yeah. Did you play Bioshock Infinite yet?
No, I'm planning to do that this weekend.
Okay.
I'll get in some snacks and have a little Bioshock Infinite party.
Get in some snacks.
Yeah.
He's going to, like, sit in a pile of snacks, just like he normally does on the weekends.
Crunchy, crunchy.
Build a chair out of Cracker Jacks.
Oh, that would be good. maybe I'll just luck out, and the Cracker Jack prize will be a chair.
There used to be a boxed snack called Doodads, which was sort of like a salty Chex Mix or like a Gardetto's Snackins. And my dad once said, hey, watch this. And he turned the box upside down, and he said... Spapoop, because it says Spapoop when it's turned upside down. So then we refer to it as Spapoop from then on. Which is pretty funny.
One of my friends was, I don't want to say pleased, he was sort of... He was having this situation where he was going to fail calculus if he didn't pay attention, but then once he discovered that calculus spelled backwards was Sulu Clack, he was just unable to pay attention anymore.
Huh.
That's a pretty weak attention deficit issue going on.
That's totally why I failed Hatam.
If you'd been in Britain, you would have had Shtam.
Shtam.
Shtam. Shtam.
Pew pew.
Yeah.
Skivik. Yeah, civics is hard to
do. To reverse, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're an S civics. I don't remember playing any other games ever.
Ever?
No. Kevin, what's in the news?
I was out of commission for most of the weekend, so I don't know for sure. But I think that Shroud of the Avatar finished up their Kickstarter. That's the Richard Garriott.
You think it? You didn't?
It did. I was just playing a bit. You see there?
Oh, that was a good bit.
Really,
you're
funny.
Pretending mm-hmm. not to know about anything. The news stories that you just wrote on this piece of paper.
Yeah. See, that was funny. Haha. It finished a little over $2 million. I guess the Kickstarter itself was a little under that, but they were taking donations externally as well.
Hey, speaking of Kickstarter, listeners, you need to fund Worlds of Magic, and then you need to fund that Weird Worlds sequel that I don't remember the name of it.
Anything that this has worlds helpful. In a plural, you should basically fund. Because we need all kinds of worlds in this economy.
Worlds of Magic. It's probably not going to be very good, but...
Yeah, I think that was the problem that people that you were referring it to were like, yeah, this looks like it might not be all that great. Which I feel like is a reasonable concern.
Sure. So fine. You don't get to play with my special custom magic item that I get.
It's true. Do you know what it is?
No, I was... I'll probably try to do some KOL reference. That's what I usually do right. whenever I back a Kickstarter at a level that allows me to customize some content in the game, I just try to do some self-serving.
Zap Jackson.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you have any examples of KOL related things that you've put into other games so far?
Eventually there will be one in the Ancient Domains of Mystery 1.0 release when that comes out.
Cool.
It's a roguelike. When we met the Doom RL guy at that party, he was sad. He was like, "That's too much money," and I was like, "But
what's too much money?"
He said that the ADOM Kickstarter was too much money. He's like, "When I do my Kickstarter, it's going to be like a third as much money, and I'm going to do 10 times as much work." And I'm like, "Well, you're like 20, so yep." Like these guys, you know, this is like three dudes in their 30s with real jobs trying to like take time off to finish a project, and you know
they've got families.
Yeah, like $40,000 doesn't go that far for three dudes that are grown-ups with grown-up expenses. Like, you know, yeah.
I wonder if I'm.
It's all about perspective, you know.
It's true.
You get these young, bright-eyed, idealistic developers, and they'll just sleep under your couch. You'd be like
under it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you might have developers in your house right now sleeping under your couch. You just don't know.
The leg of my couch broke. I'm just going to hire a 20-year-old software developer to just be the leg of my couch because they'll do it. They're just happy to be in the industry. Sorry, guys. It's crunch time, by which I mean I'm having some people over and there are going to be four or five people sitting on this couch.
Speaking of Kickstarters, the first Ouya units shipped. These were not the production units. Like these are just like really early, like the earliest possible like developer style units. And they've started getting reviewed in the press, and the reviews have been pretty negative.
It seems kind of shitty that the backer units are not as high quality as production units. Should they not have
waited
and sent the Kickstarter backers production units?
Well, these are like the like super early backers that wanted the very first units, right? Like,
okay,
they weren't really planning on having even press units. Like they're not planning on shipping stuff to the press for review until May or something.
Hmm.
So I don't know what kind of crazy things they think they're gonna do between now and then, though, because like a lot of the complaints were like the controller is not so great, you know, like their buttons are labeled O, U, Y, and A, which is like close enough to A, B, X, Y,
that it's kind of just annoying. And then, you know, there's like no, there's no marquee games yet. Like it's all just a bunch of stuff in the,
yeah,
like
I mean, the, as predicted, it's all Android store phone games, right?
Yeah. So far. And then there's, I mean, like the, I guess the, like the biggest, title on the list is Final Fantasy III.
Yeah.
But, apparently the interface is not so great. So, I mean, that's something that they can potentially clean up and change and improve, cause that's all just software or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens in the fullness of time. But it is not surprising to me. Like, I guess some of the reviews that I read said that like they were effectively getting people to pay to be alpha testers. And I was like, well, I mean, that's kind of what a Kickstarter is. And that's, I think thoughtful people expect that and are excited by that, because, you know, these are like supposed to be really hackable units, and you're supposed to be able to like go in there and do all kinds of crazy stuff if you want. I can understand
the people who are into the idea of the Ouya because they're interested in
taking it apart.
taking apart in extremely hackable hardware. I can get behind that. The people who think for some reason that it would be cool to play an Android phone game on your TV, I don't get that one bit.
Mm. You know, eventually there will probably be some cool Android TV style games.
I mean, I could imagine somebody playing Infinity Blade on a TV.
Sure.
Well no, because you'd have to swipe. You have to swipe on your TV. Entire television. Yeah, you get fingerprints all over it.
The controller has a touchpad.
Huh.
For what that's worth. But yeah, I don't know. And see, the only other thing that I wrote down, news story, was that EA was voted the worst company in the United States by Consumerist for the second year in a row.
It wasn't. I mean, it was like an internet poll.
Well, sure. No, but I mean, the Consumerist, you know, internet blog magazine thing.
That's
or whatever.
Just basically meaningless.
Sure. It's interesting that it went from companies like British Petroleum, the year that they, like, you know, had that giant oil spill, to like these, you know, mega banks when all the financial troubles happened, to now just EA for 2 years in a row. Like,
I mean,
do we just not have anything to worry about?
The worst company that people on the internet are thinking about right now.
Yeah.
So
there was that Time Magazine online poll that voted John Linnell from They Might Be Giants the handsomest man alive. He edged out Hank the Angry Drunken Dwarf.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. So is the moral of this story that you cannot trust the internet?
Yeah. Basically, that anything that happens just on the internet is meaningless.
Huh. Could you trust, say, Mad Shelley, one of our awesome Kickstarter backers?
Are they on the internet?
Well, they were at least partially on the internet.
Is she crazy or angry?
I don't know. Can you assume that a Shelley is female?
I would say it's likely enough that I'd be willing to take the gamble.
Okay. All right.
That's Shelley, Percy.
Yeah?
No? Okay.
This has a last name.
Yeah, I was going to say Mad could be the first name, and then I have no idea.
Maybe they mixed up the form fields.
The form
fields.
But there were four of them.
Form fields.
All right. Good.
Good times.
Good news. So this assignment, DuckTales.
Woo-hoo. Riff. Yeah, what's wrong with you, Riff?
Did you
like Metroid?
Well, okay. I mean, there's a difference, right? Because, I mean, I can do platforms by themselves. I can do platforms over...
Like with no
yes,
characters.
Just the platform.
Just a screen
just looking
platforms.
At a platform. That's, you know, if they're cool. I can handle platforms over bottomless pits if there's no enemies flying at you or shooting at you and the respawn is gracious, like a VVVVVV, something like that. I can do platforms over not bottomless pits with monsters if you've got more than like 3 hit points, like
this
in a Metroidvania.
Very complicated calculus.
Yeah.
Well,
play on easy because you get 6 hit points.
No, you don't.
Yeah, you do.
No, you don't.
Oh. On easy, you get DuckTales. You get there. Okay, you get 3 hit points, but every enemy takes away half a hit point when they hit you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I may not have noticed that
distinction. You could try not sucking.
You could also get to upgrade your hit points in the course of the game.
I hate to be Tim Schafer, but maybe you could get a baby to play the game for you.
I'm not even like platforms over bottomless pits with dudes flying at you, and you've got like, I guess, 6 hit points. It's, no, fuck it. I don't need that blood pressure increase.
It's tough but fair.
It's tough but not fun.
I had given up because I had forgotten about save states. And then Zach was like, play it with save states, you retard. And
if you have to save every 3 seconds, what's the point?
Because you don't.
I mean, I beat this game as a kid on an actual NES, which didn't have save states. So it's not impossible. It is a game that rewards practice and dedication because it is hard, but it is hard in a predictable way. There is very, very little randomness. There is a tiny amount of randomness built into like the moment-to-moment decisions that the AI makes about how to move enemies and stuff. But like, it always issues enemies to you. If you're moving forward, it always issues enemies at predictable intervals, and almost all of them move predictably.
Yeah.
Or not at all.
I mean, I felt the game was fair. I did not like a lot of the design decisions that they had made.
Really?
Yeah. Like so hiding stuff in the environment where you just have to pass in front of the background in order for it to spawn just seemed weird to me. Like I would find all these diamonds or gems or whatever in trees by just sort of jumping around. It caused you to
have to back up.
Well, just to spend a bunch of time looking for, like, if you were trying to get a bunch of currency to get the best ending, you spend a bunch of time just jumping around doing nothing.
Well, but you don't know that you're trying to do that, right? I mean,
I guess.
And I feel like you don't have to.
You're trying to maximize score, which is a thing that you do in most games.
But the very best ending comes from having $10 million banked. Yeah. Which you have if you get all the treasures and all the hidden treasures. Because there's 5 treasures that are worth $1 million each.
Right.
And then 5 hidden treasures that are worth...
Are there two hidden treasures?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
I assume there was one on every level.
No.
Well, never mind.
Just 2.
Yeah, that's still plenty.
It's still 3 million coins short.
Yeah, hit some chests.
And you can... I think you can use 3 million coins to heal as well. So
wait, where's that?
Hit select.
It's not, it can't be 3 million. You never have 3 million.
Not 3 million. 300,000. No, maybe it is 3 million. It might be 3 million.
I don't think it's 3 million. You never have 3 million. You never have $3 million.
No, I think from your total score.
I don't believe you.
Okay.
Are you sure you weren't just stealing a guy from the invisible second player?
I'm pretty sure.
Some guy on the other side of the internet goes, hey.
So I am impressed by this game in terms of it being fun to traverse these environments and there being a variety of different things that you can do and it being a very skill-based thing and there are, like, no power-ups. Right.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I assumed that there would be power-ups.
Like that you'd get some sort of duck gun?
No, just something. Something that, like, I assumed that the levels would be designed such that there were places that I couldn't get to and then something that would...
Well, there are. I mean, there are keys and locks.
There's only 4 across the levels, though.
That's weird, too. Like, it's across levels, but then it sends you into a weird subset of the other level that then immediately teleports you out of it. Like, when you first go to Transylvania, that first mirror doesn't go anywhere. And then when you go in there to get the key, it does, and it transports you into a room which has the key and then an exit back to where you were, which then immediately teleports you to the level where the locked door is, which is a little weird. It's weird that Transylvania thing...
Only if you have collected the key.
There are 3 versions of Transylvania. There's the version where you go to get the key, there's the version that you play as a level, and then there's the boss version, which is basically the same.
So... I'm curious, if you didn't go to... So I went to Transylvania and cleared it first, and then I went to the mine, I think, which is where you need the key.
Yeah.
And it sent me to Transylvania, and I got the key. But I played through... I didn't know that that mirror was the exit, so I played through the whole level and was like, okay, there's nothing new here, and then found the mirror exit or whatever. But I didn't get any coins on that playthrough, and I wonder if I had gone there first, does it not have any coins, or was I really thorough
and I cleared the whole level and got all the currency the first time I played through.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I mean, it's possible that it just doesn't let you inflate your score
right
when you're there for narrative reasons rather than...
You can, so there is a, like, there is a way to get an infinite score. If you go to the mine, you collect the 6,000 coins from that are hidden in that very first little bit before you get to Huey or whatever. He sends you to Transylvania. You go to the room that has the key in it, but you don't collect the key, and you bounce out of it. Mm. You can then go back to the mine, collect 6,000 more coins, and do the whole thing over and over again. I was like, cool. Yeah. I did not like the control scheme, the like jumping, yeah, having to push down and then hit a button for the pogo stick to work.
Two buttons. No. I found it. Yeah, it's A and B. It's down A and B.
No, it's not. It's just down
just
and B.
B. I don't think you were playing the game.
Yeah,
right.
You were doing something.
I looked up a walkthrough that had a controls list, and that's what it said, and that's
down,
what worked.
It's not down A and B. It's just
down and B.
It could have just been B. And I don't know why it wasn't.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand.
Because there's nothing else that you do by hitting B without hitting down.
Well, to the side, because that's also the golf swing.
Well, no, when you're in midair.
Oh, when you're in midair.
Like, when you are jumping, there's a...
Yeah, that, like, it was just a weird... It was another thing that I thought was just kind of odd.
I mean, it's like, right? I wonder if there used to be a gun that they got rid of. And so hitting B... Like, because in order to do anything with your cane, you have to, like, either... wait for him to wind up the golf swing, right, which that's cute.
Sure. I mean, it has some strategic value.
Well, because you have to pause, right? Like
those mummies.
Those dudes with the balls and chains, mummies, like you have to make sure you have enough time to actually wind up the golf swing before you can use the thing against
them. So
there's
some value
there.
Which is
cool, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that you have to wait for him to wind it up to use it as a golf club, and the fact that you have to hit down to use it while you're in midair leads me to believe that maybe B used to do something else early in the development of the game, and then they removed that feature.
You threw coins or something, maybe? Yeah, maybe that's your coin gun? I could see that.
Some sort of...
duck... weaponry?
Duck dart.
Duck dart.
Yeah.
Okay.
A bill.
Yeah.
Isn't a bill a kind of weapon? Yeah, it's like a pole arm.
A Howard, sir.
Like a Bec de Corbeil. It's like a Bardiche.
Bill Beck.
Yeah, Bill Bellamy. A Bill Bellamy Bardiche.
Yeah.
Bill Bellamy was a big pole arm enthusiast.
Yeah. He'll also survive the apocalypse.
Wow. No, that's true.
Why is there a level on the moon?
Because
the
moon
is cool.
Rad.
Yeah.
Okay.
What?
Why? I mean, I didn't even like this game, but I'm not going to question that.
It's just like, you're not in a spacesuit? Like, it was like, I was like, you don't have a helmet? Like, what? How am I surviving on the moon? So weird. How did you get there?
Kevin,
like,
that is the power of the truly rich.
Launchpad flies you there.
What?
Yeah, and you've got air dollars in your nostrils. That's how rich people can breathe in space.
I thought that I was annoyed by, but I thought the snow was interesting because, like, if you were playing the levels in order, you get to the Himalayas and then all of a sudden your pogo stick works totally differently. So I thought that was kind of cool. But then again, there was a bunch of fucking ice, and we just talked about how ice levels are never fun.
Although the ice is fine if you're bouncing on it. You don't slide if you're... I didn't have a whole lot of trouble.
No, I didn't either.
Although I also didn't actually thoroughly explore that level. I sort of inadvertently went to where the boss was and just beat the level early.
Sure.
So I didn't get a chance to get real frustrated with it. I didn't find that...
The boss fights were really easy.
Heart container. Yeah, the boss fights are really easy.
That's weird.
I guess Dracula at the end was a little challenging. God.
I assume you didn't play through to the end.
No.
I got to the end of the game, I beat Dracula, and then I got a screen that said, "Oh no, Glomgold got the treasure. You'll have to fight Dracula Duck again." And I had to beat the boss again.
Did you have to play through the entire level again, or
no,
just beat the...
just fight
okay.
The...
So after the boss fight, it takes you to this thing where it's like, oh man, you got to race this guy to the treasure. And I was like, oh sweet, is this going to be like some Metroid-style ascension challenge? But it's like, nope, there's just a rope, and you got to climb up the rope. Like, you...
just two screens.
And you climb slightly faster than that guy.
Yeah. So if you know what you're doing, it's not hard at all.
Yeah. It's just you have to like, oh, okay, I guess I should do this fast. So it's just like an are you paying attention test.
Yeah. Right after you fight the boss. And then if you do that, that's the end of the game. Like you win the game.
Great.
If you get to the treasure first.
And there's a newspaper article about how you continue to be the richest duck in the world.
Right. Yeah. If you beat the game with exactly $0, you get a sad ending.
Oh.
Yeah.
How would you do that?
Because you can spend $3 million to heal. That's what I'm telling you.
But you'd have to get exactly $3 million. $3 million.
Yes. Yeah,
that's not going to happen, man.
Well, yeah. There's a secret level. If you go to Launchpad with a 7
in
a 7 in
the
10,000th digit.
Yeah.
But okay.
It's not really a secret level, right? It's more of like just bonus a mini stage. Game, bonus stage kind of thing.
Yeah, that's weird. It's like, there's like no telegraphing that at all. And I would never know that that's why I went there if I hadn't had it spoiled, I think.
Yeah, but maybe you weren't meant to know that, right? I mean, because they had to use something, right?
A random hidden variable?
Yeah. And it was probably easier to use. I mean, because sort of there's the way that the drops work in Zelda is kind of like that, right? There's like that counter variable, and then it uses the frame number as the RNG, as opposed to actually generating a random number to check against, because it was easier to use some data that was already there. I mean, you know, the fireworks in Mario. I don't imagine that they expected. I at least imagine that they did not intend for people to do that on purpose. Right? That wasn't like a hidden secret. It was just like, sometimes you'll get some fireworks that are worth some points.
Oh, isn't that
randomly?
It's like the
it's based on the last digit of the timer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This game was actually really kind of awesome in terms of the amount of hidden stuff there was.
Yeah, the levels are sprawling for platformer levels and very nonlinear, and it's neat.
A lot of like stuff where you jump up into the interface and over walls and stuff, and like, you know, walls that are not actually solid that you go through, holes that look like you would fall into them, but they're actually continue on down to levels and stuff.
I found a couple things like that in the Amazon that I played.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
I do sort of wish
climb up a vine and it turns out there's a screen up above it.
Right.
Things like that.
I do sort of wish there hadn't been bottomless pits and identical pits that led somewhere else.
The bottomless pits tended to have black at the bottom, and the ones that actually had content had a texture that went all the way down. That was something that I noticed. I don't know if that was consistent throughout the entire game, but that was something that I noticed when I started paying attention, trying to figure out.
You could definitely see some of the sprite limitations, like the suits of armor had black squares around them.
I don't remember that.
As opposed to have it like continuing the brick texture into
that's
the sprite.
That's possible.
Like, a lot of, I mean, not a lot. Like the fact that you could golf swing all of those suits of armor and sometimes their heads would fall off and hurt you. But if you let them land, then they became projectiles that you could use.
Right.
Sometimes their heads would turn into
treasure chests.
Like,
which always had cakes in them for some reason.
Well, sure. I mean, where else are you going to keep
your cakes?
Your cake, except inside the fake head of your suit of armor.
Right.
Every once in a while, that woman would throw you a bunch of ice cream cones. Maybe it was because I was playing with save states, but I felt like the game was crazy generous with ice cream cones and cakes.
Yeah, I mean,
it's hard to farm them because there's a time limit.
Right.
But that's the only difference between normal and hard, is that in hard, all the ice cream cones are turned into diamonds and...
Oh. Cakes into ice cream cones?
Yeah, maybe.
Huh.
It just, and the coins aren't there. I think maybe the invulnerability coins.
Oh, wow. Those are pretty useful.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. The invincibility stars in Super Mario Brothers always kind of bugged me. Like, they felt dissatisfying to me even as a kid. And I'm trying to, like, justify that dissatisfaction using sort of adult sensibilities, and I don't know if this is really valid or not. But, like, so the power-ups that are available to you in Super Mario Brothers, one, there's the mushroom, which makes you tall.
Yep.
There's the fire flower, which makes so you shoot fireballs.
Right.
And there's the one-up. Right.
So the tall thing, it both increases your hit points, basically.
Right. It's an extra hit point, but it limits your mobility in under certain circumstances.
It increases your destructive potential.
It does.
Which is another interesting sort of feature.
But I feel like it is a more nuanced power-up because there are suddenly places that you can't go.
Right. The Fire Flower doesn't have that same sort of trade-off.
Well, it lets you kill stuff more easily, but everything is worth fewer points.
Oh, okay.
Right. The stuff that you kill with a fireball is worth less points. Mm-hmm. But
because it doesn't
scale progress. Like if you jump across multiple enemies, it doesn't like double the point values every time.
I never thought of that as a trade-off. I never really played Super Mario for score though, so I think that
No, I guess that's true. I mean, that was one of the first games where it's like, all right, this has a win state that I want and that is actually within my reach, right? It's not just like crazy difficult. The star, though, it felt like the game was handing you a crutch to me. It was like, it's just not interesting.
I always saw it as like a challenge to get an extra life, right? Like,
but I feel like there were places where they put a star where it was trivial to get an extra life, and then there were places where it was impossible to get an extra life, and that was it. Like, and it was just as part of the level design. But like, just turning on God mode seems like
it's time limited.
It's like but it just feels like a cheap power up.
You can still fall in holes.
That's true. The invulnerability potions in Castlevania
actually
were weird because they only lasted like 3 seconds or something.
I think that might be the trade-off, right? And maybe this will make you less dissatisfied with them. When you have invulnerability, you are tempted to go faster.
Really carelessly. Because, so you're more likely to fall in a hole.
Yeah. That would be my argument. Because
Or miss treasure that you otherwise might have gotten.
Yeah, because you're trying to get past as many enemies that you don't care about them.
All right, so you're not breaking each of the blocks for 50 points.
Yeah.
It is weird, though. I wonder, I mean, nobody plays Super Mario Brothers for score.
I mean, somebody does, right? Because there's got to be a high score list somewhere.
It was weird to, so like, when we were in San Francisco, like that last night that we were out at the bar, and I forget, it was like Nick was like, I never got into pinball because I don't have any interest in playing a game for score.
Huh.
And we had just been competitively playing 868, 56527, right. And Bump for score,
yep.
And really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I play pinball for score.
I like to see my score improve after I've played a bunch of games. But
as a measure of just like because it is a metric for you having mastered a thing.
Yeah.
Right.
For you can tell whether you're doing better than you were previously. Also, a lot of modern pinball games do have a win condition.
Right.
There'll be like wizard mode or whatever that you can
I also learned about wizard mode.
Wait, what is that?
So wizard mode is just like a thing, a state that a pinball machine will get into if you're really, really good at it.
What does that mean? What happens?
Like
the scoring rules change.
Yeah. Like, so you know how modern pinball machines have like, you know, you'll hit a target and it'll create a mode where it'll give you a specific goal, like hit these three targets and then hit that ramp.
Right.
And that means you've done whatever this task is.
Right.
Wizard mode is something that you get after you've managed to clear every single task that the game
What happens in wizard mode?
I think it's different for depending on the game. It might be like you get, you know, mega point multipliers and new multi-ball conditions and whatever.
Ben, one of the guys that brought a bunch of pinball machines to, and he's the one that brought most of the like modern, like the Tron Legacy and the Avengers one and stuff, was like super enthusiastic about pinball, and talking to him, like I was like, oh yeah, I just bought this machine, and he was like, you want me to explain it to him? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I used to own one of these. So I was like, and he was just using all of this terminology that I had to have him explain, because there's just like this whole it's just like this whole thing with consistent like nomenclature, like
wow.
Yeah, I was like, what is wizard mode?
what is game?
What is ramp? what is a jet bumper? It's a shoot the jet bumpers.
Good enough to consistently do what I want to do with the ball. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the downside with pinball, because I feel like, I mean, after you can pick up the basics fairly easily, like, you know, how to catch the ball.
Right.
But it takes a fair amount of play on a particular machine before you know how to, like, when to shoot to get the particular shots on that machine.
Yeah.
And I guess after you've become really good at one or two machines, you can probably start to where you can see the angles on a new machine. So you can generalize.
I mean, I feel like it's probably like playing pool. I mean, yeah, like,
probably,
you know, using the same cue helps, playing on the same table helps, but just getting better at pool makes you better at pool no matter what cue you're using and no matter what table you're playing on.
Right.
Like, and you're not conscious of it.
A game that I could play several times a day for a week or two at a time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Seems like it would make that different.
I played a shitload of Tales of the Arabian Nights. The kind of fucked up one that was at ZapCon.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to the point where, so there are like seven different sort of mini game modes in that, where you're trying to, I mean, they're not even mini games. They're just like goal states,
mm-hmm.
the game sets. And you're trying to collect these seven jewels, and you get seven jewels and you rescue the princess. And I guess rescuing the princess maybe puts you in the wizard mode for that. But there were two of them, two of the seven, that I just got to the point where I just knew how to do them.
Okay.
Like, and so it's just like anytime I could catch the ball in the left flipper, I can do the thing that advances the counter in this Cyclops minigame. And then anytime I could get it caught on the right flipper, I could do the thing that advanced the magic carpet minigame. And so those were just like, all right, if I start that mode and I don't get super unlucky, I can finish it. And I imagine that would happen with all the other modes also. I think Tales of the Arabian Night and the Champion Pub are interesting to me because they have a thing that, like, really, in each case, they have a thing that takes advantage of pinball being very analog, which, like, a ramp, the ball is going to come out of a ramp the same most of the time, right? Like, there are holes that the ball goes into and gets kicked out, and it's going to get kicked out in a consistent direction, right? There are parts of it that are like, this state is either on or off. But Arabian Nights has the lamp in the middle of the playfield that it's on like a rotating disc that's supported by rubber posts on either side of it, and it spins, and when it spins, wherever those posts end up changes the shape of the playfield.
Okay.
Right, so it becomes this unpredictable interaction off of that. And the Champion Pub, it's got the punching bag thing in the middle with these weird wide curved ramps on it that there are like any number of ways the ball can go off of that thing. And it's interesting because there's a risk. If you're going for the thing in the middle, the ball is more likely to come off of it in a way that just drains between the flippers,
right,
than if you're like going around the outskirts of the board shooting ramps and stuff.
I appreciate that games seem to have gotten very generous about like giving you back your ball if you don't score anything with it.
Yeah. Champion Pub has a post that sticks up in the middle in between the two flippers.
Oh, I like those.
And there are two ramps that if you let the ball rest on the bottom of a flipper against that post and hit it, it's going to go into one of the two side ramps. And that's by far the easiest way to get to them. So when that post is up, it is both impossible for the ball to drain, because even if it drains to the outside while that post is up, it'll just shoot the ball back into play for
you. Wow.
Like, that post means it's like an invincibility star, which is great in this case. But it also makes it very easy to hit two particular shots that are often very useful, depending on the game state, which is really cool.
That is neat.
You know, like, I saw that, I'm like, wow, this is like a crazy physical aspect of this device that now that I have discovered it is very obvious that the designers did this on purpose. And it's like I feel like I've shared something with them, you know?
You've had a dialogue with the developer.
Yeah, I've had a dialogue. Yeah, so that's DuckTales.
The pinball game.
Yeah. I wonder if they ever made a DuckTales pinball game.
I don't know. I never heard of
one. I've never heard of one.
Yeah. So next week's assignment, we are going to play Howling Dogs, which is a Twine game by Porpentine? Porpentine. Not the Porpentine, as I've called her in the past, because I was confusing her with a necklace from the Sandman comics. This is a Twine game, so I imagine you just...
You should just run in a browser.
Yeah, I imagine you just find it and play it on the web. I'll link to it in the thing.
Did we even make a thread for DuckTales as the assignment?
Oh, probably not.
Probably not, because none of us were around computers for the whole weekend.
We were either busy as fuck or sick as shit. We were working like dogs or sick as a dog. One night it was raining and I wouldn't put a dog out in that rain.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a dog in that fight.
But we're feeling better now because of the hair of the dog.
Yeah. Howling Dogs. Emily Short told us it was her favorite Twine game.
Okay.
Actually, she told us it was one of her favorite sort of game narrative experiences.
Okay.
So I don't really know anything about it. This was also the one at the IGF. The Cart Life guy gave up his booth and just spray painted Howling Dogs on his placard and set up a playable demo.
Was there a computer? Because when we were there, there was
It was just some USB cables. I'm like, oh man, this is the most avant-garde game ever. I guess I'm supposed to stick one of these USB cables in my mouth and the other one in my butt.
Brain.
Porpentine was one of the people that did that talk at the IGF about how there isn't enough games journalism attention paid to terrible games.
To like radically independent games or something. I don't know. I don't know what they would describe them as, like personal games almost.
There's a discourse going on.
Right now,
there's a very tense discourse going on the internet. Well, maybe it's not tense to the participants. It's tense to me. Yeah. To me, it reads like a fucking minefield. Raph Koster wrote a response to that talk, which was...
Well, I think not just to that talk, but also to sort of a sort of pervasive feeling among at least the indie developer side of GDC as a whole that was like... like, it seems like there's a bunch of games that are coming out around this time and like just in the recent past that are these sort of personal narratives, these like, I don't know how you want to describe it really. It's like
games like Dysphoria.
Yeah.
Games
diary sort of
like
games that are
from the point of view of a develop, like a personal story from a developer that is trying to like let you know about a way of life that you might not necessarily be aware, right? Like, which, you know, Dysphoria is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is it kind of like to be somebody who is transgendered or you know, wants to change their gender or doesn't identify with the gender that everybody else seems to want to identify them with or whatever. And like, that's it's like super interesting, especially if you've never encountered that point of view, right? You know, like,
so at this talk, Porpentine says the take-home message is destroy everything. Raph Koster writes, well, wait a second. You know, me and all these other guys that have spent the last our entire life making video games, like, really? You don't think there's anything to learn from everything that has ever happened up to now? And then the internet's like, no, shut up, jerk. No, they weren't really like that, but there is then a response to that, which the gist of it was basically like...
Formal game criticism
should not be added. Formal game criticism, when applied to personal games, is just a tool of oppression and shouldn't be used.
Yeah, shouldn't be used, I think.
Including, like, suggesting that...
Tightening up the graphics on level 3.
Well, suggesting that, like, games be evaluated on mechanical merits. Well, what about a game that has no mechanics? Well, maybe it fails on
a level. Yeah, is it a game?
Well, even the question, what is a game, is a tool of oppression because... Yeah, because it's
putting
like,
labels on stuff. Like labels are written by the privileged because the underprivileged can't afford Sharpies.
By saying your project isn't a game, you are effectively saying you aren't a person to the developer because they are their game. Was a statement from this sort of response to
they're not saying though that they're. That thing is nothing.
Well, but
they're
saying that it's not a game. So someone who identifies themselves as transgendered or something like that, when they put something into the world and they call it a game, and you say, "Oh, that isn't a game," that's kind of like saying, "Oh, you're not, you know, a woman or you're not a man," right? Like it touches on the same nerves that they have been dealing with their whole lives, right? Like I think that might be where the emotional side of this argument is coming from. It is really hard for me, who's never had to really worry about that kind of like being denied a personal definition to think of it that way.
Right? I don't think that train of thought logically follows.
Well, it's not necessarily a logical argument. I think that's part of what the essays or this blog post was saying
the arguments are about.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, maybe a formal logical criticism isn't applicable to something that was built by emotion, right? And maybe that's true. I mean
that was our gut reaction to most of the games that were showed in Porpentine and Kavanaugh's talk, right? Was like, that looks like I'm glad that exists, and it would maybe be an interesting thing to talk about, but Jesus Christ, do I not want to play that? Like, it just doesn't look comprehensible to start with, and definitely on a more fundamental level, it doesn't look fun at all.
Yeah.
And this is not to say that a game is supposed to be fun. Like, Dysphoria was not fun. Dysphoria was affecting.
Right.
Right? But I don't think that it is unfair to say that Dysphoria is barely a game.
Right.
There is almost no gameplay in it. So it is an interactive art experience that is extremely powerful.
Yeah, sure. And it uses game tropes and game vocabulary, which makes it more effective, especially to an audience, to somebody who plays games. Ralph Koster pointed to like a Tetris piece. You are a Tetris piece, and then there's just like it doesn't fit anywhere, and you're
right, which makes the metaphor really powerful.
Yeah.
So I would make the exact same argument about The Walking Dead. It is barely a game, and yet, I mean, I'm on record as saying I think it's one of the most important games,
sure,
of you know, this generation I think I said is one of the most important games made in my lifetime, which, given that almost all games have been, almost all video games have been made in my lifetime, is, you know, but it is barely interactive, right? It is interactive on such, like, it is a game in the same way that an especially elaborate choose your own adventure game is a game, because the gameplay elements of The Walking Dead are super diminished.
Choose Your Own Adventures, do you think there were anybody seriously discussing them when they came out? And do you think anybody said, these are not books? And would that have mattered the same way?
I'm certain that people said that they weren't literature.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll give you that. I mean, they're.
Well, but that's the thing.
A book is an object, and
okay,
that
but
is
I mean,
definitely
these,
that sort of
I mean, they
object.
Say they're not stories. I mean,
that's are they not so novels? Games is that the problem? Is that we use game to mean 10 different things, right? Like, because a game is like just potentially an interaction. Like, you know, you and I could like try to keep our eyes open longer than somebody else, and that's a game, but it's not really interesting, right? Like, like that's maybe that's the problem. Maybe this whole like it's the whole like I don't know how to define pornography, but I know it when I see it or whatever.
Right.
And like I think a lot of these sort of art pieces don't feel like a game to those of us that have been playing games our whole lives.
Mm-hmm. So here's
but maybe that's because we've got too narrow a definition.
Here's a question.
In our head.
I think the thrust of the counterpoint to Raph's letter is that to say of Dysphoria that it is barely a game is an act of marginalizing.
Yeah.
Marginalizing the creator of the game. If I were to say that about The Walking Dead, is it an act of marginalization aimed at, like, privileged white dudes?
Well, here's a question. Like, do you think that they would take that criticism and be emotionally hurt by it? Do you think that, like, they set out to make a game and you say it's barely a game, does that, like, depress them?
Well, so I could see somebody making the argument that it is easy for a privileged white dude to say, if somebody criticizes you, just blow it off, because fuck them if they can't take a joke, than it is for somebody to whom criticism is potentially a very cutting and harmful thing, right?
And it might just be the volume of criticism or perceived criticism. And
there might be a real thick-skinned transgendered game developer out there that's like, fuck them if they can't take my particular joke. And then there might be some super sensitive privileged white dude making a game that is, you know, jumps off a bridge if somebody says this game is stupid.
I mean, I think Jonathan Blow, he's even sort of gone on record saying that, like, he didn't handle the critical reception of Braid very well when it came out, right? Because he would just, like, he just sort of followed like a hawk any like discussion of Braid and like got right into it with anybody and was really sort of disappointed in a lot of the critical interpretation of what was going on with the game. And I think that might be somebody who's, you know, he's in that white male privileged class or whatever that was just had a really thin skin about his game for a while, you know, like.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't either. This is super cool because I feel like it's a really interesting time to be making and consuming games.
Well, I do feel like there is an environment right now in which because I am kind of an asshole, am scared to talk to people
about stuff,
video games.
And you're not alone because there are other people who are expressing that same sentiment.
And this is why I like you guys.
Because we're kind of the two of us. Too?
Well, no, because you're on the payroll, so you, no matter how much of an asshole I am, you can't like walk out without losing your jobs. At least I hope you understand that you can't walk out.
Well,
without
I do losing now. Your jobs.
See, these are the advantages of privilege.
When you say you like these guys, do you mean Jizzwink, one of our awesome Kickstarter backers?
Yeah. Basically, whenever I say anything, I'm always talking about Jizzwink.
Huh.
Yeah. Except for the times when I'm talking about Splash Fart. well, hey. you guys.
Listeners' mails.
Oh.
Yeah?
What?
Yeah? I don't know. I don't know if you have anything queued up.
You know, I said I was going to, and then I...
You don't did it?
I didn't do it. All right.
I can check the Tweetrons to see if anybody has Tweetroned us.
Let's see. Got here on 93. Antoid says, I'm a while behind on episodes, so this is a while back, and also, I guess, not a question. But the reason the Eagles don't just do everything is, if I recall correctly, because they're, like, literally the servants of God. So they only intervene when Gandalf asks super nice and God feels like it. Also, God is an asshole and doesn't feel like it all that often.
So just, like, regular Eagles.
Oh, I thought you were going to say just like regular God.
Oh, well, that too.
Yeah. Do you think the God of Tolkien's Middle Earth is the same as our God?
Oh, maybe.
Because eagles have never done shit for me.
What about the eagles?
They got me through some hard times.
Yeah, yeah.
As a kid, I used to sit, not sit, I would incessantly jump on a little trampoline in the living room and make my mom play Hotel California over and over and over again.
I think they also did the theme song to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio play.
Okay, yeah.
Which was really good.
Yeah.
The Eagles?
Yeah.
Huh. What about the Screaming Eagles?
That's what, where your lungs come out your back?
Yes.
I never sneezed that hard.
Elfin says, you mentioned last week that you donate to various podcasts that you listen to, which leads to the question, would you consider adding a PayPal donate link on hotdognet.com? I know you have some aversions to certain direct money-making ventures, which I totally understand and relate to, but I would totally donate here to keep me in weekly podcast love. You've said that the audience of EGHD is larger than the KOL podcast, so asking for a small donation to at least cover bandwidth seems reasonable, since most listeners presumably don't play KOL. I wouldn't say most.
I have no fucking idea.
Yeah, we don't have any stats anymore. We don't.
Yeah. We've lost all ability to track anything.
Fucking internet and servers and technology and computers and everything.
It seems like it's worse than it used to be. And I don't know if it's because people are more abusive or because...
Look at how fucking hard it is to call somebody on the goddamn phone now.
We live in a black hole of service.
Whenever we have our conference calls, it's like, all right, hold on. Let me go out in the yard. Now you call me. All right, I went to voicemail. All right, let me try calling you. Okay, like, can you stand maybe close to the window while I get on the roof?
Yeah.
I've got an old, rotary dial telephone.
We don't have a landline anymore, though.
Maybe we could just tie it to a tin can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Glebe says, Zach, you should totally play Simpsons Hit and Run. It came out before the show started to suck. Okay, started to really suck. I don't want to hear about this is when The Simpsons started to suck. Like, the point at which The Simpsons started to suck is, for everybody, the point at which they lost their soul. So I was like 22 is when most people's soul goes away. When do you start smoking cigarettes? Like 19?
Does that degrade your soul?
It does. Every cigarette uses up like 1/10,000th of a soul. And so by the time you smoke 10,000 cigarettes, you just don't have a soul anymore.
Is this why secondhand smoke is so dangerous?
500 packs?
Yeah. That's only a couple of years if you're a dedicated smoker. Yeah, so 22, let's say. 21 or 22. So whatever season The Simpsons was on when you hit your 10,000th cigarette.
Doesn't that just make you an expert at smoking cigarettes?
Oh, it does, yeah. No, you get super, super good at it.
Huh. If you've never smoked a cigarette?
Well, then you probably don't think The Simpsons jumped the shark at any point.
Hmm.
You know what has really jumped the shark? The phrase, jump the shark.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway, Glebes remembers it being a lot of fun. Also, there's cheat codes and hidden collectible thingies. Well, I don't want the cheat codes.
I think I would probably like Simpsons Hit and Run quite a bit. I know Melissa liked it.
Yep. That's the one that's like Grand Theft Auto, right?
But Simpsons themed. Yeah.
I get it confused with the Simpsons game that is like Crazy Taxi.
Yeah, I wish I had more time to play Crazy Taxi. Is it available on the PC,
No idea.
Because it was super fun when I got to play it at Galloping Ghost, but I only played like 3 or 4 games of it before we moved on to other things.
God, Galloping Ghost. I wish that... So I'm beginning to rethink where I would set up the portal if I had a portal done. So it used to be Anna's Taqueria.
Okay.
Right. But now I'm thinking maybe Galloping Ghost.
You should just get multiple portal guns.
Okay.
I think. So you can set up two portals, like a front and a back at Galloping Ghost and a front and a back at Anna's and a front and a back at home.
Oh, okay.
Right. So you need to buy like a dozen portal guns.
That's only 3.
Well, that
what
that
you just described is only 3.
Yeah, but so you I guess probably also want one. You probably want like, one in the office and one in the house, and then one.
Right? I don't know. I don't know that I would waste a portal charge on like an 8-minute
save 15 minutes
every day. I use those 15 minutes though. That's like my
to get there,
but jerking off in the car time.
If you have a portal in here, that means we can use it.
Okay, you can use a portal in the front of your pants.
Aren't you guys watching me jerking off in the car?
In front of the pants and the back of the toilet. I don't know.
How do you jerk off? Forget I asked.
Yeah,
I don't.
No.
Our chicken says, there's been lots of concern lately about always on DRM, always online DRM. Oh, I mostly play Kingdom of Loathing as a single player game. I like the multiplayer things at times, but I usually ignore them. I have no idea how prevalent that is among players. As devs, if you could create an offline KOL app instantly/trivially, would you? If not, what are your concerns? Cheating, community, money, piracy? I would not. I mean, because I think of it as a game, the way that I think of like World of Warcraft as a game that is primarily an online game. And I know that you can play it by yourself, but that's not really what it's for. And I felt the same way about Diablo 2, which is why I didn't care about Diablo 3.
The is a surprisingly important part of the game. We feel okay making items that are rare because we know that they will end up in the player economy.
Yeah, like and in a single player game, a monster that you kill that has a 1 in 100 chance of dropping an item is bullshit.
Yeah.
In a multiplayer game where there's going to be a million people playing it, a way to make something actually rare and precious and meaningful is to make it so there's only a 1 in 100 chance of it dropping every time anybody kills one of these monsters. And the person that wants it will be able to get it from somebody who wants what that person has more than they want the thing that dropped.
Right.
And it's just a way of creating an additional game inside a game, and it's one that I find really interesting. I mean, I like the idea of a player economy more than I like actually participating in a player economy, but like that's okay. I just want it to be there.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, and that's not to say that every game should be like that, but
right.
No, I would not make an offline version of KOL. Doglord420 says, why can't Riff pronounce Mulu properly?
Mulu? Moo-moo.
Yeah, regional accent. Sure.
Kodrick says, oh man, Doglord got me thinking about the arbitrary game terms and design decisions that practically every game uses. What is the value in using a video game shorthand that's established instead of coming up with a unique idea designed specifically for the game you're making and the story you're trying to tell? Well,
tropes.
It saves a lot of... It saves you a lot of effort explaining shit to people and lets people just play, right? I mean,
we all understand what a, like, flashback is, for example, right?
Right, because it was established by Orson Scott Card in his novel Giants, Citizen Kabuto. So you know in a video game, if it hands you a sword, that you're going to have to run up to a dude and hit them with that sword. And if it hands you a crossbow, that you're going to shoot a dude with that crossbow. But if you make up a new fictional world where there's some horse shit that's like a melee weapon that looks like a crossbow, you're going to have to explain to people you got to hit a dude with this, as opposed to just letting them understand, based on previous tropes, what the thing is.
Yeah.
And so he goes on to give some examples. Why are hearts for health? Hearing how frustrated the video games hot dog team got playing Castlevania, where hearts were mana, was hilarious.
We were frustrated.
Yeah, we were frustrated. We were just bemused.
I mean, so, okay, you have to... Sure, you don't have to use the established tropes, but you, for fuck's sake, need to be aware of their existence.
Yeah.
And making something that works directly against that is going to be confusing.
Right. I mean, like, if I'm like, no, it is critical to my artistic vision that health potions be blue and mana potions be red, my artistic vision is bullshit.
I mean, yeah.
Why do we say melee damage instead of hand-to-hand damage? Who the hell says melee in real life? The French? Well, I would argue, who the hell says hand-to-hand in real life? Who talks about how much damage various weapons are going to deal in real life? Like,
the
nobody, because
maybe.
Almost nothing that you do is about combat in the real world.
Well, the modern world.
Hand-to-hand to me implies no weapons, right? It implies... Mm. Like, okay. Unarmed combat.
Versus close range combat.
Yeah. Melee just means contact.
That's how I understand the word to mean, and even if it isn't the actual meaning of the word.
I get that some items are common, some are uncommon, and some are rare, since those are all descriptions of scarcity, but why does every game have epic items now, and why are epic items always purple? Epic isn't even a frequency of occurrence, and don't get me started on legendary. At least in KOL, epic describes the quality of the food or booze, but still, why purple? Because it's an established trope, and it worked well. And those are all, like, they found colors that were easily distinguishable, that looked good on a black background, and they just established a trope. And every time I play an MMO... and I can't control it using my World of Warcraft muscle memory, I get pissed off.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's the same as, like, WASD and mouse, right? Why does every fucking game have to use WASD to move around? Well, because it's a better world if any game you sit down to play, you can move around using WASD and mouse. And it's not like, oh, we decided to just move it over to the right for some fucking reason.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's Esdif or Rudfug or
I mean, Tufg. Things, there's no reason to change things that everybody are used to just for the sake of changing it.
I would argue more standardization for immaterial stuff, like what yes. color represents what grades of item, is better for everybody, because it's just less, it is less work that you have to do explaining shit to your players, and yep. it is less what?
I'm just imagining what somebody who makes personal games would be feeling right now. They're like, oh, these guys are just lost causes. Like, there's just they have no sense of what it means to like make a personal game, because they're just so lost in their, like, you know, societally imposed, you know, schemas and stuff like that. And, you know, yeah, maybe we fucking are. Like, I don't know.
So what's the name of that style of movie where you're not allowed to use
Dogma 95?
Dogma 95, yeah. I'm not going to watch any of those.
So you say that the first Dogma 95 film is fucking great.
Okay, I'll amend great. That to hearing about what Dogma 95 is, I am not enthused to watch any of okay. those.
The first Celebration is a great movie. The Idiots is a great movie. Yeah. And then there are some others that are not so awesome. Right?
You know, I mean, art is great. Art is not always fun. Sometimes I just want to play a thing that's fun.
I was thinking about how many movies do you know where there is no dialogue?
Huh.
Not silent movies.
Okay. Like, yeah, and like the first half of WALL-E, you mean?
Yeah. WALL-E, or
that's the only one I can think of.
Baraka,
off the top of my head.
Or
right? Baraka. Okay. Yeah, I've seen that.
A couple others like that, in that oeuvre.
There's that scene in Breaking the Waves with no dialogue where the young punk ass guy is drinking a can of beer while the old teetotaler man is drinking a glass of water, and they're just glaring at each other because neither of them approves. And the guy guzzles the entire can of beer, and then the old man is like guzzles the entire glass of water, and then the guy crushes the beer can in his hands, and the old guy just sits there staring at him and just squeezes the glass until it snaps. He just fucks his hand all up. It's one of the best scenes.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Like, I'm like, finally Lars von Trier is making something horrible happen to a man in his movie. So Kingdoms of Amalur divides their item categories into their white, green, blue, and purple. And right. purple is unique, and blue is rare, and white is normal, and green is infrequent, which is which is pretty clumsy.
I mean, it's just those colors just make such good sense because they're good progression. You've got green progresses to blue, which progresses to purple.
Roy G.
And then legendary is orange because it's a drastic change, which is meaningful going from the rare to the legendary.
I feel as though you could have uttered that sentence with any colors in place of the, like, I'm not trying to be a dick about this. I'm just saying, I don't know that there is anything meaningful about it, but there isn't anything inherently meaningful about anything.
That's not the only reason they're good.
Green, blue, violet does make some sense in terms of like the spectrum of color,
yeah.
right? And then orange is the only secondary color that's left, right?
I don't believe any of the things that you or any of my artist friends say
about primary
color.
And secondary colors.
Yeah, no, I really don't.
Okay.
Well, that's just because you can't see.
What was it? Because red, green, and blue, and you told me that green was not a primary color?
Well, not in terms of pigments, no.
Okay.
In terms of light.
What am I, a caveman?
Yes.
Am I a botanist?
Are you a doctor?
Only cavemen and botanists care about pigments.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And maybe racists.
Painters?
Cavemen care about racists?
Sandwich Dew says, hey guys, regarding the discussion on the 3DS Castlevania game, Mirror of Fate, Kevin brought up a lot of story elements that ran contradictory to the previous Castlevania games. I think that was Riff, actually. That's because Mirror of Fate takes place in a new continuity that started with Castlevania Lords of Shadow in 2010. It's actually a pretty good game as long as God of War-style gameplay doesn't anger you.
Huh, okay. So that's a different continuity. Why that makes me feel less annoyed then, I guess.
Break the continuity in two like that?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they weren't
positive
about
why didn't they subtly change the spelling of Castlevania? when they did Castlevania. They didn't, but that, I'm just saying, okay. Like, as a way to distinguish the continuities.
Sure, I'd be behind that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was enough listeners mail.
Okay.
All right, guys. I've had a really good time doing an episode of Video Games Hot Dog with you gentlemen.
Sure.
If somebody wanted to send us a listener's mail, yes. Kevin, you're the guy that explains things on this podcast. Explain.
Apparently, everybody is talking on Twitter. So I highly recommend that you tweet at us because that's a thing that people should be doing. And we're on Twitter at VG Hot Dog.
Kevin's gotten real excited about Twitter in the last few days.
Yeah.
Just today, we told Anthony Birch that he was a big stupid head.
No, you said that. I said, puzzles are cool.
I said, why don't you think puzzles are cool, dummy?
Look at what you guys are missing by not being on Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter that shit up.
It's great. You could email us, which is apparently a dying means of communication.
Yes, for old people.
But it's vghotdog@gmail.com. And then you could go to our forums, which are pretty great, actually. I highly recommend checking out our forums. They are available at a link, which you might find on our website, videogameshotdog.com.
www.videogameshotdog.com.
Dub.
To be more specific.
http://.
And forward, these are forward slashes, not the backwards.
Does it matter really?
I think it wouldn't work with backslashes.
I mean, if you're typing in http, aren't you already lost?
A backslash is worse than nothing.
Oh yeah,
sure. Well, guys,
yeah,
I'm gonna miss you. Oh, until the next episode of Video Games Hot Dog.
I'm going to miss you for real.
I was talking to the listeners.
Like our awesome listener, Eriquin. We got to work through these names, guys. We still have a fucking huge full hat. So, thank you, Eriquin, for backing the...
This one just says PG. Thanks, PG.
Oh, that's PG Tips, the English tea magnate.
Oh, wonderful. I didn't know tea was attracted to magnets.
Have a great week, everybody.
Good night.
Or you could just, like, wear a fog machine as a hat everywhere you go.